From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. Today, Germany's fury over allegations that the personal cell phone of Chancellor Angela Merkel was monitored by US intelligence.
We have always expected that the Chinese and the Russians would tape our phones, but that an ally and friend is doing this is shocking.
America's espionage activities overshadow a summit of European leaders. Also today, President Obama urges immigration reform. The former police officer awarded compensation after he pepper-sprayed Occupy protesters.
The moment of the pepper spray was something I will never forget. Officer Pike walked up and he raises the pepper spray so that the crowd sees it and then just hoses them down until they are literally soaking in orange pepper agent.
And the self-publishers helping keep book sales alive. That's ahead on today's FSN Reports.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. European leaders are meeting in Brussels with fresh allegations of U.S. spying threatening to overshadow the talks. The meeting comes just 24 hours after German Chancellor Angela Merkel called President Barack Obama over claims that the U.S. had monitored her mobile phone communications. Our Europe correspondent, Sandra Gatman, reports.
Officially speaking, it's a very broad agenda this week for EU leaders, dealing mainly with economic and social issues, boosting the digital market, and dealing with Europe's increasing migratory flow from Northern Africa. But of course, the latest scandal surrounding the alleged tapping of German Chancellor Merkel's phone by U.S. intelligence services, and this week's earlier news of spying in France as well, is likely to work its way into talks behind closed doors. And of course, EU leaders might want to use Thursday's summit as a platform to demand further clarification from Washington.
Pakistani officials have secretly endorsed American drone missile strikes for years, according to a new report in the Washington Post. But in his Oval Office meeting with U.S. President Barack Obama, Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif repeated his public position, asking for the drone missile strikes to stop. Priscilla Huff reports from Washington.
Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has repeatedly said American drone missile strikes against his country must stop. But apparently that's for public consumption. According to documents obtained by the Washington Post, there was a tacit agreement between the two countries on drone missile strikes. In fact, the CIA regularly briefed Pakistani officials on targets and even civilian casualties. Furthermore, U.S. Predator drones were flown from Pakistani air bases in the early years of the campaign. A spokesperson for the CIA denied to comment on the documents obtained by the newspaper, but did not deny their authenticity. It is estimated that American drone missile strikes have killed some 3,000 Pakistanis, Islamic militants, and civilians.
It hasn't been a great week for major U.S. banks. A jury has found Bank of America liable for fraud stemming from the mortgage crisis. And now, new reports say federal prosecutors may take criminal action against J.P. Morgan Chase over Bernie Madoff's failed investment scheme that caused investors to lose billions of dollars. From New York, Stephen Fee has the latest.
Federal authorities are mulling charges that J.P. Morgan continued to work with the disgraced financier well after questions had been raised about his investment activities. The latest scrutiny for J.P. Morgan comes just days after a tentative $13 billion U.S. dollar settlement over the bank's mortgage practices during the financial crisis. Prosecutors have discussed a deferred prosecution against J.P. Morgan that could suspend criminal charges and replace them with a fine and other concessions.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. An Australian pilot has died after the plane he was flying crashed while tackling raging bushfires. The 43-year-old pilot was a father and husband from central New South Wales. He was flying a plane which was dumping water when it came down in rugged bushland on Thursday morning. Australia correspondent Brian Portland has this update.
Emergency staff have been unable to recover the man's body as fires are still burning in the area, which is described as exceptionally rough terrain. Shoalhaven local area commander Superintendent Joe Cassar said an ambulance officer's been winched into the remote area where the crash occurred and has confirmed that the man was deceased. He said it's a tragic day for the man's family and the rural fire service. Thoughts, he said, go out to his family who have to deal with the grief of losing a husband and father. Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons paid tribute to the pilot. He said it's a tragedy for the firefighting community, but first and foremost, it's a tragedy for this man's family.
And a 13-year-old boy who was carrying a replica assault rifle has been shot dead by police in California. An investigation is underway after officers opened fire when the boy refused to drop the fake rifle. Our U.S. correspondent Dan Whitehead has more.
Two sheriff deputies in the city of Santa Rosa spotted the teenager with what officials described as some type of rifle. The 13-year-old, who was identified as Andy Lopez, died at the scene after the officers fired several rounds after repeatedly ordering him to drop the fake weapon. Police say a full investigation is now underway. A spokeswoman for the boy's school described him as a very loved student and a very popular and very handsome young man. It comes just a day after a 12-year-old boy in Nevada gunned down a maths teacher at his school and wounded two fellow pupils before taking his own life. Dan Whitehead, Washington.
And that's the latest feature story news. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
Ausspähen unter Freunden, das geht gar nicht.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel telling reporters today that US surveillance activities carried out against her are unacceptable and calling on the Obama administration to try and restore trust in its partners and allies. She was speaking after German officials were quoted as saying there could be no return to business as usual between Washington and Berlin after the German leader learned yesterday her personal cell phone was being monitored by US intelligence agencies. The White House will only deny that the Chancellor's communications are currently being monitored or will be again in the future. Earlier today, FSN's Simon Mark spoke to Carsten Voigt, Germany's former coordinator for transatlantic relations, and asked him about the strength of feeling in the country over the allegations.
We have always expected that the Chinese and the Russians would tape our phones and would spy against us, but that an ally and friend like the United States, a symbol for freedom, is doing this is shocking. The amount is shocking, and the fact itself is shocking.
How much damage does this do to the U.S. relationship with Germany? I know people there were saying this morning it will not be possible to return to business as usual. Is that a real, honestly expressed sentiment?
No, I would define it in a slightly different way. I would say the relationship with the United States, between the United States and Germany, is so stable that the relationship will be stable also in the future, and it will be a relationship between friends. But what should worry the United States, that the United States, as a symbol for freedom, is suffering, and that this image is not only suffering in Germany, but it's also suffering in a couple of other European nations.
Now, it would seem that President Obama, in his telephone call with Chancellor Merkel, was unable to assuage her concerns about what may have occurred here. What should the United States government do now, not just to communicate with the German Chancellor, but with the German people about what has occurred?
First of all, it's not only a German problem. The French are as concerned, for obvious reasons. And the outrage in the European press is there not only in Germany, but in most parts of Europe. And what it could change the image or repair it is that America is changing its practice. I mean, I have been German-American coordinator. Once I started this job, I have asked our intelligence services whether we are spying in the U.S. We definitely are not. And I could imagine how an outcry would happen in the U.S. if the U.S. would find out that German intelligence services are spying on the U.S. president.
And is it the German government's belief that if President Obama had truly wanted to stop this from happening, as president, with the authority that he has at his disposal, he could have stopped it? Is there any suggestion there that perhaps there's a military intelligence complex at work here over which he doesn't necessarily have full control?
I don't know the official position of the German government. They have not made any statement on that. I personally have had the impression that after 9/11, for understandable reasons, the always complicated balance between civil liberties and security, the balance was developing in direction of security, not and that freedom
liberty suffered. And this is understandable, that this combined with the new technical possibilities which you have had, especially in the IT sector in the last years, has created a situation which is, I think, of a qualitative new nature. I don't think that this is there is enough sensitivity for that in the American intelligence community. And I will not blame, at this stage, I will not blame the president for that. I think this is, after this has come now to the public, it's more a task of American politicians, of American journalists, of American public debate to engage in a discussion inside the U.S. but also across the Atlantic so that a rebalancing might find place more in direction of civil liberties by not neglecting the necessity for security. By the way, we have had a similar problem, not identical, but similar problem, because the technology was not so well developed at that time, when we had a lot of terrorist activities in the 70s. And I remember vividly that I was criticized in the U.S. at that time that our behavior was a revival of German traditional authoritarianism. So I'm not surprised that Germans are now reacting in a similar way. And as I'm saying, there are qualitative new situations because of new technologies.
Carsten Voigt, Germany's former coordinator of transatlantic relations, on the line today from Berlin. America's surveillance activities in Europe overshadowed a summit meeting today in Brussels, where European leaders were supposed to be talking about issues including the economy and the plight of migrants. In the past week, allegations of the scale of US espionage have rocked France, Germany, Italy and Mexico. And in other countries, leaders are being asked if they can prove the United States has not spied on them as well. FSN's Europe correspondent Sandra Gatman covered today's meeting in Brussels, and I began by asking her how EU leaders have been reacting to these latest NSA revelations.
Well, walking into talks, European leaders have been expressing varying degrees of outrage. Of course, all eyes were on German Chancellor Angela Merkel as she walked in and was immediately jumped on by the international press, asking for reaction to these allegations of her cell phone being tapped by U.S. intelligence services. And her response was quite a stern one. She said that friends simply don't spy on each other. And she also suggested that bilateral relations between Germany and the U.S., might have been severely damaged. But we also heard stern comments coming from other European leaders as well. The Belgian Prime Minister, the Danish Prime Minister, and others, of course, all publicly denouncing the practices while calling for facts to be found as well.
Is anyone there, any of these European leaders, really surprised by what's happened?
Well, if they aren't, they sure aren't showing that, because there's a great deal of shock and surprise on the faces of many European leaders walking into the summit. Lots of outrage, lots of outcry. But the question is, of course, should there be any surprise between these governments who all know the tactics that US and other intelligence services are capable of? There is already a great deal of intelligence sharing between the US and European countries, and this has been going on for decades.
And in terms of the EU leaders putting their heads together on this, do you think they're actually going to come up with some form of cohesive plan of action, some sort of collective response to these allegations?
Well, there was an interesting comment today from the Finnish Prime Minister, who acknowledged that the data protection laws that are currently being discussed at the European Parliament will ultimately increase the level of privacy for citizens, and that will help. But it was also said that spying will go on regardless. There are no laws binding governments from carrying out secret operations, as we've known for decades. But at the same time, I think there is a sense that the free trade talks going on between the US and the European Union may be halted. The European Parliament President Martin Schulz already mentioned that these talks cannot go on if trust isn't addressed.
Sandra Gatman in Brussels. Well, while the Obama administration is under siege in Europe, it was hoping for an easier relationship going forward with Pakistan. The new Pakistani Prime Minister, Nawaz Sharif, visited the White House yesterday and did not mince his words over the use of drone airstrikes to target Islamic militants on Pakistani soil. Today, the Washington Post published claims that top Pakistani officials had approved the use of drones by the United States. FSN's Daniel Renches has been working on that story all day and joins me now in the studio. Daniel, what does the report tell us?
The report is basically two Washington Post journalists, including the veteran Bob Woodward, who broke the Watergate scandal, the Nixon scandal, they've obtained lots of documents from the US. And basically what they show is that the Pakistanis have been cooperating from late 2007 until late 2011. Of course, relations broke down over the storming of the Osama bin Laden compound in the garrison city of Abbottabad in Pakistan. So it's not clear whether they continue to cooperate, but the documents do show a high level of cooperation in which they met regularly to discuss the success of operations where they targeted top leaders. And indeed, sometimes the US accepted Pakistani requests to take people out with these drone aircraft.
Is there any sign that the US will actually heed Nawaz Sharif's call for an end to US drone strikes on Pakistani soil?
The US agreed that it would not violate Pakistani sovereignty, but it didn't say anything explicitly about drone attacks. And so there is a question mark about whether the Pakistanis may still accept some drone attacks, even though public opinion in Pakistan is virulently against any US military intervention. And indeed, I think Nawaz Sharif's statements reflect Pakistani public opinion. But Shuja Nawaz, who's a fellow at the Atlantic Council here and an expert on the Pakistani military and establishment, says essentially he thinks though drone attacks are going to decrease, there will still be a fair amount of cooperation with the Pakistanis.
FSN's Daniel Wrenches. This is FSN Reports. In a speech at the White House today, President Obama called on Congress to pass a long-delayed comprehensive immigration reform law, creating a path to citizenship for some of the estimated 11 million undocumented people currently living in the US. He said the proposed reform, which passed the Senate this summer but stalled in the House, is politically popular and a benefit to both the economy and national security. But many undocumented immigrants and their supporters across the country are protesting against the president for calling for immigration reform while at the same time nearing a record 2 million deportations during his time in office. FSN's Alice Olstein reports from Capitol Hill.
As the president called on Congress Thursday to pass comprehensive immigration reform by the end of the year, a group of undocumented parents occupied the office of New Jersey Democrat Robert Menendez, one of the Senate's key architects of the immigration reform bill passed in June, and one of very few Latino lawmakers. They're calling on Menendez and other members of Congress to support their children, a group of undocumented youth called the Dream 30, who put on high school graduation robes and crossed the U.S.-Mexico border a few weeks ago. They are currently detained in El Paso, Texas, while they petition for humanitarian asylum.
It's incredible the level of insensitivity these politicians have towards us. They see us as strange creatures. They see us as a burden. But we're workers. We pay taxes like everyone else.
That's North Carolina resident Jose Hernandez, who brought his family to the U.S. from Mexico 20 years ago when his daughter Rocio Hernandez Perez was 4 years old. Rocio now faces deportation, and Hernandez says he plans to sit in Menendez's office until the senator agrees to intervene in her case.
I know we broke the law in coming here. I accept that. But they shouldn't punish our children. I'd rather they deport me and protect my daughter in Mexico. You've heard of the cartels in Mexico that cut off heads and dismember people and don't even care. Right across from our family's house, a drug cartel bought a house, and now they're threatening my daughter. You think I can sleep soundly at night?
In many past cases involving DREAM Act eligible youth caught up in immigration detention, a private call or public demand from a member of Congress has convinced the Department of Homeland Security to use prosecutorial discretion and issue a stay of deportation. Mexican national Maria Zuniga, who's been living with her family for 14 years in Georgia, said she's asking the president and members of Congress to live up to their speeches in support of immigrants and do the same for her son.
Dicen que apoyan la reforma migratoria. Ahorita es un buen momento.
They say they support immigration reform. Well, now is a good time to prove it. If they don't support 30 young people, how will they support 12 million immigrants? This is a time to show that they really support the Hispanic community.
Buen momento para mostrar que en realidad están apoyando a los hispanos.
In a speech at the White House Thursday morning, President Obama called on the House of Representatives to follow the Senate's lead in passing a comprehensive immigration reform bill. He credited the wave of protests organized by the immigrant community and their allies with the progress achieved thus far.
I want to thank you for your persistence. I want to thank you for your activism. I want to thank you for your passion and your heart when it comes to this issue. And I want to tell you, you got to keep it up. Keep putting the pressure on all of us to get this done.
The president did not mention the record number of people, nearly 2 million, that have been deported by his administration, including many DREAM Act eligible young people. Many groups are calling for a moratorium on these deportations while Congress debates a bill to create a path to citizenship. The president told the crowd of immigration reform advocates attending his speech that they, quote, don't look like folks who are going to give up. The parents staging sit-ins in congressional offices say he's right, and they plan on continuing to take action until their children are freed. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
This was the moment former U.S. officer John Pike casually fired pepper spray into the faces of kneeling student protesters. The students were part of an Occupy protest at the University of California, Davis in November 2011. The victims successfully sued the university, but it now transpires that the officer responsible has also received compensation over the incident. Earlier, I spoke to Davis-based attorney Bernie Goldsmith, who witnessed the event firsthand.
Chilling things I've ever seen in my life. If you would imagine a broad open field on the quad and several student protesters who I know personally to be very dedicated, nonviolent people sitting down in protest, and a phalanx of armed police marching up to them and throwing them on the ground, and around the entire scene a ring of horrified students who weren't involved in the protest before but suddenly realized that they should be. It was amazing. After the initial group of students were arrested, another group of students joined arms and sat down in the pathway between the police and the vehicles that they were going to use to remove the protesters that they were arresting. And while the sitting students didn't really pose an obstacle to the police, which, as you can see in the video, they freely stepped over them and around them, it was decided by whoever was in command at the scene that they should be arrested too, and so the pepper spray went out. The moment of the pepper spray was something I will never forget. Officer Pike walked up, and I mean, you've seen the video. He raises the pepper spray so that the crowd sees it, and then just hoses them down until they are literally soaking in orange pepper agent, and the crowd howled. But as a credit to them, they did not intercede. They just watched in horror as Pike walked up and down casually spraying these nonviolent students, their fellow classmates.
The students involved in the pepper spraying incident, they were compensated to the tune of approximately $30,000 each. But we also now understand that the officer involved, Officer Pike, has also received compensation.
The students did sue the university for violating their civil rights, which the court decided it had done, and were awarded $30,000 apiece. But surprising to just about everybody, Pike himself filed a workers' compensation claim. Pike claimed that the mental trauma that he experienced that day when he was dousing the students and the mental trauma that he experienced from what is essentially universal revilement after his heinous actions qualifies him to compensation because of the mental stress that it caused. He filed a lawsuit, I believe it was in September of last year, and it's been going through the system. Pike was finally awarded on the 13th of this month a workers' compensation claim for his mental trauma for the amount of about $38,000. Legally speaking, the amount is not very significant. It's essentially go-away money.
Attorney Bernie Goldsmith. Now, it could be the next great American novel, your guide to smart investing, or that vampire romance that might give the Twilight saga a run for its money. If you've ever thought of publishing your very own book, but can't find a publisher or just don't want the hassle, this might be the best time to go it alone and self-publish. Li Ling Tang reports on the surging trend that is self-publishing and what you can do to get your book out there.
That's Judith Glynn, freelance travel writer and now author and self-publisher, inviting me into her home from where she penned her first self-published novel.
To hold this in my hand, knowing all the time that it took to make it, it's a wonderful feeling.
Judith worked for 4 years on her debut novel titled A Collector of Affections, and when a book agent didn't take her very far, she decided to self-publish.
There's really one big merit. You don't have to accept no. I wrote for a niche market. I wrote a romance story for a middle-aged couple, or particularly a woman. So right away, that starts knocking me down from the Fabio-type romance novels. So I decided I would be my own yes, and I would figure out how to do it.
Judith is among scores of aspiring authors flocking to a range of online platforms that help writers self-publish electronically. Platforms such as Lulu, Nook Press, and Kobo Writing Live. Amazon's popular Kindle Direct Publishing and Create Space also enable writers to self-publish electronic books, paperbacks, and hardcovers. Self-publishers produce some 250,000 new titles a year, according to Kevin Bryman, publisher of Publishers Weekly, a weekly news magazine that has covered the publishing business for 150 years. It is known among bookworms as PW.
PW is a mainstream review medium. At one point, we would never touch self-publishing. But as I saw the quality coming out of books, it just started to ramp up in terms of titles. There was print on demand that gave authors the opportunity to print on their own, create small opportunities. And more people were just leaving houses because they wanted more control.
The weekly magazine now offers a supplement called PW Select that caters to self-publishers with book reviews and self-publishing tips.
I'm surprised at how rapid it has gone in the last couple of years because technology has changed, e-books have changed. So I think the technology has really escalated it.
And while self-publishing provides aspiring authors and independent writers a way to publish at a lower cost, there are still expenses that come out of pocket, such as the cost of hiring professional editors to proofread manuscripts and expenses that go into a publicity campaign or a book tour. But still, self-publishing is proving to be a viable way to get that book out and a formidable trend that is already turning the page on the publishing industry, in which publishing houses now look out for self-published talent on the strength of their book reviews and the size of their fan base. Li Ling Tan, New York.
And that's the Thursday edition of FSN Reports. Let us know what you think of the programme. Our email address, reports@featurestory.com. That's reports@featurestory.com. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're there, @featurestory. Coming up on Friday, a special edition of the programme will bring you an extended interview with Salman Khan, the controversial education reformer whose Khan Academy campaigns to make a free, world-class education available to anyone, anywhere.
I think the state will always play a very strong role. I think public education is a very, very powerful thing. I think our role is to show cases where, without extra money, with the resources on hand, you're able to move the dial.
The views of Salman Khan on Friday's FSN Reports. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside producer Rebecca Foster. For everyone with Feature Story News everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.